It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station.
It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump.
Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Older than I'm white.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is gonna be huge.
I believe this is gonna be our finest hour.
Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Time to get over the hump. We're taking you home on a Wednesday. Three down, two to go with this work week. And this is the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, four to six. I am Brett Rump, Adam Lundy in the producer's chair. You are connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Any questions, comments, or suggestions? Adam, we should do some catching up because I know we had some texts come in last hour that we didn't necessarily get a chance to get to. A number of topics that we talked about in our last hour, including what is the profile that Indiana needs to search out and other topics. Of course, the Colts, they've got a situation where seems like the entire division is becoming aggressive, and the Colts are running it back. Run it back.
Yeah, those Houston Texans, they got a taste of the NFL playoffs last season, and they want more.
Yeah, and do they run it back? No.
No.
You know, they would have the reason to run it back. It's like, let's not screw this up. We got in the playoffs.
Right.
No, what they do is they're risking loss of draft picks and everything else to go for it today. And if the Colts believe that Anthony Richardson is their guy and that these guys were all worth bringing back because they could make the Colts a winner and a playoff contender and maybe even a championship contender, which is the goal. The goal isn't just to survive and make the playoffs. The goal is to make the playoffs because you believe you could win a championship.
Huh.
And so if you believe you're good enough with all these guys coming back, then at some point you got to say, what's the one thing we can do or we can add or position that we can upgrade that can get us over the hump? We're 9-8 last year. That wasn't good enough, as it turned out, to win a division. And so the Colts really don't have a lot of moves they have to make. Therefore, they got to find the resources to make those moves, whether that's a star wide receiver, whether it's a tight end, whatever it might be, maybe a lockdown corner. But right now, the Colts have kind of stood pat, and they've watched everybody. Like I said, the first hour, I think the Colts just got pantsed by the Houston Texans because the Colts were standing there not paying attention, and Houston just signed or traded for Stephon Diggs out of Buffalo. So Josh Allen loses his favorite target. Mm. I don't know what that means for Buffalo.
Yeah, Buffalo, their GM kind of said, he kind of had a weird statement today saying, you know, we're not giving up. There's a lot of reasons why we got rid of Diggs. It's just kind of awkward there in Buffalo right now.
Personality maybe didn't mix.
There was a little bit of drama, there with Diggs.
But Houston's like, hey, it's worth the risk.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a chance now. We're a division winner. We got a chance in a division where we can move up because nobody's being as aggressive as we are. I mean, I do like the move for Houston. I think it was worth the shot to bring in a star receiver. I look at the Colts roster and I'm like, you know, it takes some star power if you're going to be successful in the playoffs. I mean, go through the playoffs and look at how many teams that didn't have a bona fide star actually advanced into conference championships or the Super Bowl.
Sure.
And the Colts just don't have star power.
No. And I mean, just continuing to look, I mean, it wasn't just Diggs for the Texans. I mean, they've added running back Joe Mixon. They've added DeNico Autry, Jeff Okuda at cornerback. I mean, Colts have been wanting cornerbacks, and they also got C.J. Henderson for the Texans. You
Okuda
know?
Was the guy that we talked about on the draft board when that draft happened.
Yeah.
DeNico Autry is a guy that's a former Colt.
Yep.
And so, yeah. They've gone out, made moves
Mixon
to make themselves better. Now, their defense was not good last year.
Right.
They did have some holes to fill defensively.
Right. But they add defensive end Daniel Hunter, defensive tackles Tim Settle and Foley Fatowski.
Yeah. So. Yeah, they filled up their defensive side, and they took care of the needs they had. But then the next step is we've got a rookie quarterback who we think is special. Yeah. How do we get him to his full potential? Oh, maybe it's bringing in top-flight weapons because we can afford to pay a running back and a wide receiver because we're not paying the quarterback $45 to $50 million.
Whew.
And so they get Joe Mixon as their featured running back, and they get Stephon Diggs now at wide receiver.
That's a scary team, man. I'm scared. I mean, you got C.J. Stroud throwing to Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins, Tank Dell, Dalton Schultz.
And Collins was supposed to be their number one. Collins was kind of their Michael Pittman.
Right. But now they have a new number.
Yeah. Yeah. More weapons.
And Anthony Richardson still going to be looking for Michael Pittman Jr.
Yeah. And Chris Ballard, yeah, he's sitting in the office. Maybe he goes and gets bourbon and cigars with Mike Woodson. Maybe that's what, maybe they both hang out together. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862, what do we have on the text line?
Yeah, somebody texted in, Ballard won't trade up because he's afraid of missing. He's fine with going 500 to keep his job.
Here's what I said earlier. This was the year for the Colts to start bringing in some potential future stars in this league. And I like Marvin Harrison Jr. I would love to see him go to the Colts. They might have to get aggressive, get into the top 10, maybe the top 5 or 6. But how much would it cost you? You're only moving up from 15. It's not like a major leap, you know. So, and again, if you signed everybody and brought them back, you've got a full roster.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's just a matter of where do you prioritize the upgrades and go get those three or four guys in this draft that you know are going to make you better. And one place the Colts could definitely get better is wide receiver. And they've got Michael Pittman now locked up. Get somebody that can be on the other side for the next 3 or 4 years. Marvin Harrison is that guy. And you've got Anthony Richardson for the next 4 years. You've got Michael Pittman Jr. locked up for the next, 4 years?
Mm-hmm.
And you've got that opening on the other side where you could get a draft pick and have him for the next 4 years. Why not? Why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah, I mean, but it's just in my brain. As soon as you mentioned potentially moving down, I just think, oh, wait, we have Chris Ballard. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, moving up causes Chris Ballard to go into convulsions and stuff. He has conditions there. But I don't think he's ever done it.
I'm
wondering out of the draft, I believe the most popular thing that he has done is to actually bump down.
Oh, he loves that.
I think he's done that more than he's actually stayed pat and made the draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We talked about last year that it was a year that the Colts needed to be aggressive because if they picked their quarterback, they had to go get him.
Here we go. Ballard has made 18 trades on the day of the draft. 4 of those 18 draft day trades have been trade ups, while 11 have been trade downs to accumulate more assets.
So almost 3-1, he's more likely to trade down than to trade up.
Ugh.
And the trade ups have been not in the first round. I don't think he has traded up in the first round in any draft. I know he traded up in the second round. He went up, and I believe it was when he got Jonathan Taylor.
Right.
I think he traded up. He also traded up. Did they trade up to get Josh Downs? May have traded up for Josh Downs. But, I mean, there has been a few, but it's generally second, third, fourth round where, you know, you're only giving up a late round pick.
Right. That was the highest overall pick he's ever traded up for. It was the 41st overall pick, and that was 2020 Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. What else we got?
Somebody said, all of these Texans moves remind me of the commercial with Jerry Rice and Dan Marino and all the older old guys suiting up again. So a little bit of a super team maybe forming down there in Texas.
They're trying. And, I mean, they went from young and lacking talent to where now they're probably the best in the division.
Yeah, I'd have to give it to
them. I think that's the best roster right now in the division is in Houston.
Yep, but but it's also worth noting just the Tennessee Titans. They go out and get somebody that everybody wanted the Colts to get. They went and got Snead.
Yeah.
So it's just like there's another team that's doing a move that people wanted Ballard to do, but he sits on his hands.
Yeah, he didn't get it done. And in fact, when it was reported that there were talks, then they actually refuted those reports, and apparently there weren't talks. By the way, this came out. 12.3 million people watched the Iowa versus LSU women's basketball game, an Elite Eight game, the other night.
Wow.
I mean, that passes a lot of the NBA Finals games. It passes a lot of the NCAA men's tournament games. It's more than who watched Purdue versus Tennessee.
Yeah.
So the Elite Eight game with Purdue and Tennessee didn't have as many viewers as the Elite Eight game in women's basketball between Iowa and LSU. Unbelievable what Caitlin Clark has done to the women's game. And now Iowa, Connecticut.
Mm.
I guess who's going to watch more? Who's going to get more viewers this weekend? Iowa, Connecticut, or will it be Purdue versus North Carolina State? Actually, I think more people will watch. Do you think more people will watch Purdue, North Carolina State, or will watch UConn versus Alabama?
I'm going to go with Purdue.
Because I think Zach Edey and DJ Burns is a bigger storyline that people will attract viewers.
Right, right. Then UConn, Alabama.
Also, I was doing some research, just kind of looking through some of the current transfer portal and everything, and just happened to look up information about the Mastodon's freshman recruit that's coming in. Of course, they signed him last fall.
Mm-hmm.
What a year he has had as a senior at Preble Shawnee High School in Ohio. He was announced earlier this week as a finalist for Mr. Basketball in Ohio. He's already committed and signed with the Mastodons. Mason Shrout, a 6'4 guard, a shooter out of Preble Shawnee High School, 23 points per game, 7 rebounds, shoots 53% for the field, and of course 40% from three. He'll fit in perfectly here in Fort Wayne. This guy has been nothing but short of special this year over in Ohio, and being named as a finalist for Mr. Basketball in the state.
Yeah.
Oh, don't do that. Don't give him any recognition. As far as I'm concerned, it's like, just ignore the fact of his existence. Don't let any other teams know that, you know, hey, there's this guy in Fort Wayne. But he's already signed. He's signed his NLI, not his NIL, his NLI, and is committed to the Mastodons. He'll be showing up in June to join the Dons for workouts this summer. Hey, Christopher James Menswear, that's where you go to get your spring fashions. Right now, golf shirts, maybe some khaki pants. You need some nice shorts, nice dress shorts. Yeah, it's all available for you at Christopher James Menswear. And, of course, if you want to look your best at work, that's where you go to Christopher James Menswear. They specialize in some really nice high-end fashions, top designers. They can take care of you from head to toe with shoes, suits, pants, denim, you name it. Christopher James Menswear has it. They give you personalized service to make you feel like a real customer and not just a number. That's Christopher James Menswear. Go where I go. They're on Covington Plaza on West Jefferson, just a block west of Getz. Even if it was an early trip down to Indianapolis on Saturday, driving in the rain, it was well worth it because we got a chance to see another state championship for the 260 as the Canterbury Cavaliers delivered in Class 1A at Gainbridge Fieldhouse with a 48-41 win over Bethesda Christian. And the state championship coach of the Cavaliers is joining us right now on our guest line. It is Derek Adams. And, Coach, congratulations.
Thank you so very much, Brett. I appreciate it greatly.
Now, are we interfering with your spring break? Is that this week?
Yes, it is. It is, but you are not doing any interfering at all. This is I'm happy to do this.
Well, of course, we want everybody to be able to enjoy some relaxation after a grinding season. But, boy, the guys just didn't disappoint. And, you know, it was one of those things when I arrived down at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, I got a sense from all of the Central Indiana media that you guys didn't have a chance. They shouldn't even take the court. That was almost the impression I got, that Bethesda was an unbeatable team. They were a power. They had dominated a number one ranked team in the state the previous week. How did you get your guys to believe?
You know, it started way back in August, you know, probably even before that in June, when we had our June period last year. And we were able to see our entire group together and just see how they gelled, see how they communicated, and see that they were bought into the plan that we had moving forward. I really knew that we had something special. You know, I don't hold anything against any media or anybody for having any ideas about, you know, what we can or cannot do. You know, my message to the kids has always been, hey, you have the opportunity to prove a lot of people, you know, wrong, or prove a lot of people, you know, right. I mean, whatever you choose to look at it. And they really adopted that. And you know, we knew that, you know, I think that's, you know, a general thing. We haven't had many 1A state champions from, you know, from our part of the state. And so, you know, until we show that we can compete at that level, I think that's, you know, that's understood. And I think our guys took that to heart.
Well, you know, you can look at a team and know they got a potential to be special, but state championships aren't always passed out, like you said, in Class 1A in this area, and definitely not at Canterbury. This was the first one that boys basketball's ever won. So was there a point during the season where you looked at this team as being a team that could do something special, to where you felt like this is a team that could possibly maybe pull off this state championship?
Yeah. Yeah, I go back to even before the season, and it's just a mindset that I've talked about. You know, we do an annual Pacers trip with the team to just have them together and that be a, you know, kind of a gelling point. And you know, this season's team we took down there, but last season's team we actually took down there. And while we were down there, we had the opportunity to cut down the nets after the Pacers game, and that was kind of me sending them the message that, hey, we are capable of doing these types of things. We are capable of taking this program in those directions. And you know, I've told people this, and you know, they can choose to believe it or not, but I said we had intention to be down there last year. And I think that, you know, we had a tough sectional with Southwood, and I take nothing away from them. They made one heck of a run to get down to state. But we thought going into that game that we had that same opportunity, and we picked a bad night to have a bad night against Southwood, and you know, they played well and rightly so took the victory. But you know, it was set in motion some time ago, and I you know, the guys, you know, I know I got kind of that side-eyed look a little bit when I first stepped in, but I told them, I said, my intention is to hang banners, and I said, not for me, it's for you and your recognition. And I think that's, you know, there's been complete buy-in to that this season, especially. You know, we fell short of our goals last year, and I think that was their full intent to get down to Gainbridge this year.
I thought the guys all bought into their roles, and whether it was defense, whether it was distributing the basketball, but I'll tell you, the guy who put on the show on Saturday was John Parent. He was pretty special.
Yeah, he was. John's been fantastic all year, and he's dealt with a couple games where he was a little bit injured and dealing with some knee issues. But the one thing I can say about John is that he's been steady. He's been so steady for us. And, you know, he's a guy that gets overlooked a little bit when you have guys with the talent of a Tucker Day or a Devin Lewis. You know, everybody seems to overlook those guys. But John is every bit as good. And I think that helped us. You know, I think everybody, you know, was so hyper-focused on Devin and Tucker that allowed John to step into that role of just kind of taking over at times. And he wasn't the only one. We've had some other guys that have stepped into big moments and delivered. And, you know, it's again, something we've talked about since last summer is that, you know, every night we've got the talent level that every night it can be somebody different. And that's quite okay if it is.
You know, it's interesting when you look at the rosters, and when I was putting together, you know, game boards and everything, I see Bethesda Christian's a 1A with a 6'8 guy. Boy, that's got to be a huge advantage. And then I realized, you know, Tucker Day, I didn't know he was that tall, 6'8. So you got a chance to kind of match up. When you look at personnel and you kind of match them up, both are very similar to one another.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. One of the first things that I did was look at us statistically, comparatively to Bethesda, and you know, it was kind of scary how close we were in most categories, and you know, even in terms of scoring, you know, how the scoring was distributed amongst the, you know, kind of your top three or four players, and you know, so we knew going into it that they were going to present a problem, and that, you know, all the matchups were pretty darn even.
It was also quite a crowd that showed up for Bethesda Christian. And while Canterbury had tremendous support, Canterbury had a longer trip, and Bethesda's not too far away, and it kind of helped. The environment was really special, too, and I thought that was maybe one of the big challenges. Your kids haven't played in that type of an atmosphere, a hostile environment like that. They handled it really well.
Yeah, I would agree with you 100%. They handled the moment, you know, really, really well. And you know, I credit to that to their maturity. And again, their buy-in and collective, you know, unity that that they presented all year. You know, it's they are picking each other up and you know, dusting each other off in those types of scenarios. And for them to just, you know, exist in that environment and quite frankly thrive in it is a credit to them as young men.
Coach, next year's starting lineup is going to look vastly different for Canterbury. Five starters, five seniors. What is the future like? How do you build on this? How do you transition into next season?
Yeah, I think it's just the idea of some of the younger guys getting to experience this postseason. You know, with the extended roster of 18, you know, we were able to get some of our rising freshmen and some of our juniors that, you know, maybe didn't see the amount of playing time this year that they would have normally, and just have them in that environment, have them be a part of it and understand what it takes, you know, at all levels and all aspects to get to that point. We've got some really solid guys coming back that have been a part of the program now for a few years. And, you know, I think they are chomping at the bit to get that opportunity as well. You know, and these seniors have been great ambassadors for them, and they've been hugely supportive of them and really challenged them in practices and challenged them in you know, game film meetings and you know, training room meetings that, hey, you know, you guys are capable too, but you just got to kind of step up to that moment. And again, that buy-in and that you know, that unity, I think will drive us into next season for sure.
Coach, enjoy the spring break, enjoy the off season, which never is really an off season, and good luck in preparation for next year. Congrats again on the state title.
Thank you so much, Brett. I appreciate you having me.
Yep, that is Derek Adams, coach of the Canterbury Cavaliers, joining us here on the Sports Rush. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we've got Rayfield Davis to join us, talk Purdue basketball. That's next on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Pacers basketball coming up tonight. They take on the Brooklyn Nets at 7 o'clock. We've got coverage right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. And, of course, we are your home for Purdue Boilermakers basketball. And that means the Final Four this Saturday. Boilermakers take on North Carolina State, and we'll be on the air with the pregame starting at 5 p.m. here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. One person that's probably been watching these games, a little more anxious than a lot of us, but we've been enjoying the ride. It's Rayfield Davis who joins us right now on our guest line. Rayfield, explain to me. I don't know if there's the proper words for how it feels for those that are past Boilermakers, but what went through your mind? What were your emotions when you saw that the Boilermakers finally got that win in the Elite Eight and were heading to the Final Four?
No, it was big time. I mean, it brought tears to my eyes. I mean, I'm with my daughter right now. My daughter was born in 2013. In the 2013-2014 season, that was the year Purdue finished last place in the Big Ten. That was 10 years ago. So obviously she's 10 now, and to be able to see what Purdue has done in the last 10 years since becoming last place in the league when I was there as a sophomore, it's been nothing short of amazing. I mean, when Lance Jones hit that shot on the wing, I mean, I just felt like a sigh of relief. I just felt like we had finally did it. I felt like I was on the floor. I started jumping around, going crazy. I mean, they got down 11 in that first half, and I had to go on a walk around the studio. I was in a studio covering it in Chicago. So they got down 11. Coach called a timeout. I went on a nice little stroll around the office. So it was just a whirlwind of emotions. I'm happy for the guy. You see Robbie Hummel and Coach Painter embrace after the game. I mean, my teammate PJ Thompson, knowing what he went through, being under recruited, to being a guy that helped really change the program, to the work he's put in with Braden Smith as a point guard, especially in ball screens, to see him now calling the plays, controlling the offense, I mean, I couldn't ask for more. I mean, and then it's just the opportunity to cover it. I mean, thinking of myself and being back in basketball and being a guy that's in media and being in the studio on a night where Purdue is going to their first Final Four in 40 years, it was something I can't describe. It, like I said, I tell everybody, it was up there with, I have three kids, so I would say it was the fourth best feeling that I've had.
Was there a particular player? Were you texting? Because to me, it's just amazing. Purdue, I don't think it's completely unique, but it does seem to be a pretty special bond with former players that are connected to Purdue University and how they've kept in touch and how they have continued to have such an active role in supporting the program. Were there teammates you were texting with to try to keep your sanity?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I talked to Dakota Mathias every day since. I mean, I talked to Dakota during the game, after the game, then after trying to figure out plans to get to the, try to go there to Phoenix. Maybe we're going to stay together. Talked to Vince Edwards right after the game, and Vince is in Germany. So Vince is actually 7 hours ahead of my time where I was in Chicago. So he stayed up all night watching the game. I mean, you check P.J. Thompson and Coach Brentley. They FaceTimed me while I was at our youth camp this week over at OPS, and the kids got to see the trophy and all of that stuff.
Wow.
So, yeah, we talked to John Nakias, another teammate of mine. Talked to Lewis Jackson this week. Anthony Brown, another teammate of mine. I mean, I talked to all the guys. I mean, all the guys are uberly happy. All the guys feel the same thing because all the guys are just happy for Paint. Because in college basketball, not all coaches do it the same way. Not all coaches do it the right way. And I'm no one to judge because I've never been in that position, but I look at Paint. And me being in college basketball, I guess, since I was 14 years old when I first started getting recruited by Division I colleges, high major, is that Payne has done it the right way. He hasn't cut any corners. He hasn't tried to take the elevator. He's just hit the pavement day by day, taking the stairs, hit every one of them, and he's done this exactly how you should. And we have nothing but the utmost respect for Payne because I can remember Payne being at his worst in college basketball, being last place in the league. And like I said, me having my daughter that year, he was worried about me mentally. He was worried about me off the floor, if I was fine off the floor. And I think when you have a coach that you know cares about you off the floor, and then you have 10 guys that understand the value in that, that's when you get guys really buying in. I think this year's team has the most buy-in from top to bottom as any other Purdue team has ever had. From top to bottom, they're all bought in on the same role, the same goal. They all accept the role. They all know who they are. They all understand who's the star on the team. It just there's no cliques in the locker room. Everybody is together. I mean, it's just it's beautiful to see when you see something well and something that's happened in a genuine way.
I mentioned the other day that I thought Matt Painter's demeanor on the sideline played a key role when they got down. He is always the same guy. Doesn't matter if you're up, you're down. He looks like the same guy on the sideline. He's not a guy that shows a lot of fire or a lot of temper. Is that the real Matt Painter you've seen behind the curtain? Is that the real Matt Painter that we're seeing on the sideline?
Yes, that's definitely the real Matt Painter. I mean, Coach Paint would always tell us, he'd always say, don't get emotionally drunk. Don't go out there and do something stupid. Don't play through your emotions. Don't turn the ball over and then pick up a foul. You know what I mean? Like plays like that. And I remember his quote. His quote was, don't get emotionally drunk. And that's something that he would say to us, and that's something that he lives by. Stay even keeled, understand the moment, stay in the moment, be in the moment, be present, stuff like that. And when your coach is telling you that, yeah, you can hear it. But when you see your coach act that way, you start to feel it. You start to believe it. So they weren't rattled. They got down 11. Coach called that timeout. They came out and they responded. Coach always said, good teams win close games. Good teams respond. And the game of basketball is all about runs. And can you stop a run? And can you go on a run? And they stopped that run, and then they went on that run, and then they didn't look back. And then in that second half, their defense really dug in. They were able to come away with that win. But like I always tell guys, I always tell people, if you see a guy that's, more times than not, you see a guy that's a senior in college, that's acting a certain way, attitude-wise, on the floor, it's normally more times than not his coach acts that way. I mean, his normally players turn into their coaches demeanor-wise. And I think you see that with Zach Edey. Zach Edey wasn't this way when he came into Purdue. And you hear that with Robbie Hummel. You hear the way Robbie Hummel calls a basketball game, the way he talks about basketball, his vernacular, the words he uses, it's all coming from Paint. It's Paint's playbook all over again, which is why, I mean, people may think I know what I'm talking about when I talk about basketball, but I really don't know much. I just know what Coach Paint taught us. So I think Paint's a guy that he really cares about the person and the human behind the player, and that's why he's had the success this year. But then also just his ability to stay calm and really not panic, I think that's been big time, especially this season.
I don't know if there's the right adjectives or if there's a comparable performance or somebody that you could compare him to, but what Zach Edey has done so far in this postseason run, how do you explain it?
I mean, it's unexplainable. I mean, you hear some of the numbers. I mean, Mike Hall, well, I was on Big Ten Today with today on the network. He listed a stat that said this season Zach has over 900 points and Zach has over 450 rebounds for the season. And that hasn't been done since the 70s. And the guy that did it was Larry Bird. So, I mean, you think in all the tournament stuff that you hear, he's had these numbers since he had 40 since the 80s. Or he's back-to-back National Player of the Year since Ralph Sampson. Or no one's averaged X, Y, and Z since 1966. So all of these numbers are just phenomenal. You think about the numbers and people are saying, yeah, he's big or whatever. But you go back to the 90s. I mean, Shaq played in the 90s. I mean, a lot of great big men played in the 90s. And some of these numbers, Zach's are better than in a different era. So I think sometimes we fail to realize that we're witnessing greatness in the moment. I mean, you look at Northwestern and Boo Booey. Boo Booey's going to be the best player to ever play at Northwestern in this current moment, unless somebody comes in. And if someone comes in, it's because of what Boo Booey did. And I think with Zach Edey, I think you talk to Purdue folks and you say he's the best player of all time. And maybe they, you know, I mean, they want to say Big Dog. They want to say Rick Mount. But then you tell them, I mean, you think about it. Individually, Zach Edey has the most points in the career, the most rebounds in the career. And y'all know a lot of people would say, well, Big Dog scored 1,000 in the season, averaged 30 points. Well, right now, Zach has two games left, and he's sitting at a 926 points. And I don't think there's anyone in the country saying, oh, he can't score 40 again. So, right, I mean, he's right there numbers-wise with Big Dog for a season. And then you think about the team accolades he's had. I mean, been to the Sweet 16 as a sophomore, was a number one. He was the number one team on a number one team in the country. He was National Player of the Year, and they had no all-conference guy other than Zach Edey last season. So last season, Purdue was number one in the country, number one seed. Zach Edey's Player of the Year, but they didn't have another guy make all-conference. So I think having that weight on them, you look at those teams that Big Dog had, the players around it were all-conference guys throughout those years. And then you think about this last year, and this was the Final Four, the Elite Eight game, is what kind of sealed the deal for me. And because you go back to the 90s and when Purdue was in the Elite Eight and they lost that game to go to the Final Four, no disrespect to Big Dog. I mean, obviously, number one overall pick. You can't say anything wrong about his game. But he didn't perform his best in that game. Rather, if it was an injury, rather not, when you're out there, in my opinion. And for Zach to be in the Elite Eight game and go for 40 and 16, get the team back to the Final Four, do it with everyone on his back. Purdue made, I think, four three-pointers in that game. So I think we're watching not just the best player in Purdue history, but one of the very best players to play in college basketball ever.
A lot of people say that he's just a 7'4" guy, and all of his accolades are because he's just so big, he's unguardable. How do you defend that?
I mean, I played with Isaac Haas. Isaac Haas was 7'2", 300 pounds. I mean, 2 inches shorter. But if I was you look at a 6'7" guy and a 6'5" guy, you're not going to say, oh, man, those 2 inches really helped him. You know what I mean? So Isaac Haas didn't have the production Zach Edey had. I played with A.J. Hammons. A.J. Hammons was 7'1". He didn't have the production Zach Edey had. And they were around better players. You look at Isaac Haas, he was around better players. He was more one-on-one at times. And he couldn't move like Zach Edey. The agility Zach Edey has, the endurance he has, to be able to play. He played 39 minutes against Tennessee. I mean, there were times where Isaac Haas couldn't give you 25. So no disrespect to Isaac, just at that size and at that weight, it's just a lot of luggage to move around. So I think with people that say that, they just don't watch basketball. They just aren't, I'll say it, just aren't intelligent basketball minds. I mean, it's just a lazy take. It's a terrible take. You look at all the 7-footers that don't have this type of production, all the 7'2 guys, 7'3 guys, don't have this level of production, don't have this level of physicality, don't have this level of want to. They don't shoot it well from the free throw line like Zach does. I think it's a really lazy take. It's disrespectful, not just to Zach, but it's disrespectful to the game of basketball. And the basketball guys cry every time they hear statements like that.
How does Purdue avoid a letdown and get too self-satisfied with just making it to the Final Four?
Well, I don't know. One, I wouldn't call it a letdown. And maybe because my little cousin plays for NC State. My little cousin, Jaden Taylor, he's playing for NC State. They won 9 straight. And I don't mean like that's my around-the-way cousin, like he's a friend of the family. Like that's actually my little cousin. That's my blood cousin. So I'm never going to bet against family. So I don't know if I call it a letdown. You make it to the Final Four, you're one of the best. You're one of the 4 best teams in the country. So I don't know if I say it just because of their seeding. They just had to figure it out, and they figured it out at the right time. So I think DJ Horn is a really good player. I know DJ Burns gets a lot of attention, but DJ Horn can score the ball. He can hit you with 30. If you look at that Marquette game, DJ Burns had 4 points, and they still were able to beat the 2-seed Marquette because DJ Horn led the way. Marcel made some shots. So they have some guys to where they can go out there and play. They can compete. They're long. They're athletic. They're physical. They can pressure you. But I think for Purdue, it's just about going out there and do Purdue things. I mean, move, rebound the ball, take care of the ball, push it in transition when it presents itself, and move it. Move bodies, move the ball. So I think if Purdue goes out there and helps Purdue, if Purdue doesn't beat Purdue, I think they'd be in a good shape. They can't turn it over. They can't allow North Carolina State to get those offensive rebounds and put backs. They can't give up wide open shots. They got to know what they're doing on DJ Burns, if they're doubling or if they're staying one-on-one. But I think as far as Purdue, just make sure you go out there, have fun with it. But do approach it how you approach any game this season. I mean, when you look at Coach Payne and what he writes on that whiteboard before the game, you want to have less than 4 turnovers in a half. You want to keep the opponent less than 25 points in a half. You stick to those principles, and then you out-rebound somebody. Coach would always say, if the team that has the most rebounds, when you look at a box score, the team that has the most rebounds or the team that has the fewest turnovers, they'll win 80% of those games. So that you start there, and then if you make some shots, you get some special performances, they could be playing in a national championship.
Do you put Zach Edey on DJ Burns?
I would put Trey Kaufman-Wren on DJ Burns and put Zach Edey on Diarra. Because Diarra's a guy, he doesn't shoot the ball well from deep. I think he shoots maybe 1 or 2 a game. He shoots about 30% from 3. And that way you limit DJ Burns' vision. If you have Zach Edey coming over as a double guy, Trey Kaufman-Wren is 1-on-1 and Zach Edey's coming a double, DJ Burns is a really good passer. So if DJ Burns sees a double and he's able to see over that double guy and kick it to the opposite wing, that's when NC State can get a lot of those kick-out threes. But if you have Trey Kaufman-Wren on the backside and then you have Zach Edey coming from the middle, you limit his vision. Especially as a left-hander, you really limit him and what he can do passing-wise. But then you look at how Purdue played against a Wisconsin and Zach Edey was on the Tyler Wall. Or you look at how Purdue played against Illinois and Zach Edey's on the Ty Rogers. I think you can do something similar in that fashion and just have Zach Edey come over and help and kind of be that disruptor. I know Coach Payne. Coach Payne's going to – he may stay one-on-one because Zach Edey's a guy that Coach may say all of that, and Zach Edey say, nah, Coach, I want him. He has that type of mindset to where he may want that one-on-one matchup.
Well, and this is what I was going to bring up to you. I was going to be the other assistant in the office that says, excuse me, Coach, if we put Zach Edey on him, can't he handle him one-on-one and then we don't have to risk the double team?
Well, yeah, he can. I have no doubt in my mind that Zach Edey can handle him one-on-one, no question about it. I think he can. I think he'd do a really good job. I think he's a load to deal with on a block as a defender. But I just think if you want to you want to switch things up, I think you go that route. But then also, you go either way. I think I know DJ Burns is an amazing player. He can really get the job done. But I know he can go off for 30. But in this game, I'm more worried about DJ Horn than I am DJ Burns.
What's next?
Say that again?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying I think I'm worried more about DJ Horn than I am DJ Burns. I think you can stop DJ Horn, you beat NC State.
What's next for you?
I'm in studio. I'm in studio all week. Just finished up today. I was on the shows today. I'll be on the show tonight, and then I'm back in tomorrow. So I'll be in Chicago all week. Being able to cover the Final Four is a blessing, but then being able to cover Purdue's first Final Four in the last 44 years is crazy. But then when I think about it, not only am I covering Purdue in their first Final Four, I get to cover my little cousin from NC State, from Indianapolis. They get to play against Purdue. Purdue didn't recruit him. out of high school at Perry Meridian in Indianapolis. They didn't go after him. So I'm hoping that my little cousin can go out there and he can have 30-plus points. But I'm really hoping that the Boilers come away with the victory.
Have a great weekend. You're doing a great job, and glad you had time to jump on with us.
Oh, no, I appreciate you guys having me.
Yep, that is Rickville Davis, Big Ten Network, former Boilermaker, Southside Archer, joining us here on the Sports Rush. We'll take a quick time out, come back, wrap it up. It is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Wow, what a show today. And of course, if you missed any of it, you're going to want to catch up. You can always find us on our podcast page. Just go wherever you listen to your favorite podcast and search for The Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Make sure you like, subscribe, review, and check out all of our shows. They're always available 24/7. Big thanks to our guests that appeared on the show today, including Derek Adams, coach of the Canterbury Cavaliers, and Rafael Davis. We're coming back tomorrow, 4 to 6, another edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.